bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. We're glad you can join us. It's October 16th, and I'm Paul Dragoo. There's an election fraud trial happening in Bridgeport, Connecticut this week. A city hall employee is accused of stuffing a ballot box in the middle of the night, and there's video to prove it. Also, Republicans are saying they're willing to work with Democrats to vote in a new Speaker of the House if GOP rabble-rousers continue in their troublemaking ways and insist on an America First Speaker. But first, Democrat U.S. legislators think we should bring refugees from Gaza into the United States. On Saturday, the New York Post published an article with the headline, "Progressives Call for U.S. to Take in Some of the Expected 1 Million Gaza Refugees." The Post reported, "Experts predict a million refugees might flee the Gaza Strip amid the war between Israel and Hamas, and socialists and far-left lawmakers said America should welcome them." One of those socialist lawmakers is Congressman Jamal Fire Alarm Bowman of New York. You know, the guy under investigation for pulling a fire alarm in the House Cannon office building just before the speakership vote. Bowman says the refugees would be vetted to keep Hamas members out. But what are the chances there will be records for every Hamas terrorist trying to get in? And the Biden administration is ambivalent on the matter. A spokesman said, "We continue to provide support to Palestinian refugees through the UN. The United States also has a worldwide refugee resettlement program in partnership with the UN Refugee Agency." The idea of bringing in Palestinians sympathetic to Hamas has prompted Congressman Andy Ogles of Tennessee and Congressman Tom Tiffany of Wisconsin to introduce legislation that would prohibit the Biden administration from granting visas to people with Palestinian passports. The bill is known as the Guaranteeing Aggressors Zero Admission Act, or GAZA Act. On Saturday, Representative Tom Tiffany said on X, "We can't let President Biden abuse our parole and visa rules to bring unvetted Palestinians into American communities the way he did with thousands of unvetted Afghans. I introduced the GAZA Act to protect America's national security." Sadly, foreign nationals who support terrorism are already here. On Saturday, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida said he'll introduce legislation requiring the Biden administration to rescind visas of foreign nationals who support Hamas. Rubio said in a press release, "The Biden administration has the authority and an obligation under existing law to immediately identify, cancel the visas of, and remove foreign nationals already here in America who have demonstrated support for terrorist groups and in many cases even celebrated the slaughter of Israeli babies and the rape of Jewish girls." A week ago, Congressman Ogles used the social media platform X to post his concern about America's vulnerability. He said, "Our border is wide open. The enemy is already here. We must begin mass deportations immediately and secure our nation. No sanctuary, no amnesty." Biden's open border policy has resulted in a huge increase of people on the terrorist watch list trying to get into the U.S. The Hill reported that Border Patrol caught 268 non-citizens on the terrorist watch list since Biden became president nearly 3 years ago. During Donald Trump's 4 years in office, that number was 14. We don't know how many terrorists have actually gotten in, but the chances of them being zero are probably zero. Meanwhile, the fighting in Israel could soon escalate. Hezbollah is on full alert along Lebanon's border, and on the weekend, the Times of Israel reported that Israel considers Hezbollah its most serious immediate threat, estimating it has some 150,000 rockets and missiles that can hit anywhere in Israel. The Israeli news outlet also reported that Iran's foreign minister warned Israel to stop its Gaza attacks or risk, quote, a huge earthquake from Hezbollah. So joining me to discuss today's stories is executive senior editor of The New American, Steve Bonta. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Paul.
Holy moly, is there a lot going on. Where in the world do you see this going? Is Israel going to take Gaza? Is Hezbollah actually going to make good on their threats? Or do you imagine they'll just sit there and rattle their sabers?
Well, I'd say yes and yes. I think, you know, the Israelis, I think, have had it with trying to be the nice guy. In the past, they have been considerably more ruthless The Six-Day War being a good example of that, a preemptive war that they launched before the Arabs had a chance to jump the gun and seized a whole bunch of territory, much of which, of course, they have not relinquished to this day, the West Bank and so forth. The back in the days of when Black September was the terrorist group that spearheaded the Palestinian efforts when they were committing the Munich massacre and then of course the hijack of the Israeli LL flight and diversion to Entebbe in Uganda. The Israelis generally hit back pretty hard, and in recent decades have allowed themselves to be persuaded by outside would-be authorities like the United States, which of course knows everything about every conceivable ethnic and internecine conflict in the world. We always have an answer.
Of course we do.
Sure. And so it was partly in response to our encouragement that they set up this whole arrangement in Gaza and have adopted this hands-off approach, even to the point of not really retaliating in any significant way every time Gaza decides it's time to fire a few rockets into Israel, off a few Israeli settlers for fun. And
which they do quite frequently.
Well, sure. And to put this into perspective, first of all, proportionally speaking, had 9/11 been on the scale of these attacks last week in Israel, the week before last, now I guess it is technically.
See what, tens of thousands of
deaths? We'd be looking at tens of thousands of deaths, okay? If we had a comparable political situation, that would mean there were groups in Mexico and Canada poised at any moment to try to seize U.S. territory, conducting periodic raids into U.S. soil, firing rockets into the U.S., constantly targeting our major cities. Yeah. You and I both know that we would not stand for that.
Yeah.
And yet we enjoin Israel to do that. Okay, and as for the whole thing, the Palestinians, the land belongs to them. The Israelis, the Jews are interlopers, and so forth. That's complicated, and I don't want to get into it now. We don't have enough, but suffice it to say, the Jews do have a claim on part of Palestine. I think personally, to the extent that it's any of my business, which it really isn't, but if I were to venture an opinion, I'd probably say some sort of a two-state solution would probably be ideal.
But isn't that
the problem
is
neither side wants it, particularly the Palestinians. The people in Gaza are like 70% and more opposed to the idea. They want a one-state solution, and this slogan, from the river to the sea, means they want to drive the Jews out or alternatively kill them all.
Well, it's important to mention that in recent polls taken, the people of Gaza actually support Hamas overwhelmingly.
Oh, absolutely they do. They have for a long time. And so this is, but on the question of immigration, it is a significant fact, not just now, but throughout the history of this conflict, that all of those allegedly benign Arab neighbors who are so sympathetic with the Palestinian cause somehow never want Palestinians. Egypt has sealed its portion of the border with Gaza and is saying, oh, we don't want the refugees coming in here. We don't want those people in here. Jordan and all these other countries that are always making these symbolic gestures of solidarity somehow don't want to help to resettle them or to send any aid other than weapons, of course.
Yeah.
And the government of, the Hamas government itself has done nothing with its revenues but buy weapons to the extent that Israel, for the last almost two decades, has been furnishing power, and other essential infrastructure needs to Gaza more or less free of charge because Hamas won't do it. They're too busy buying rockets and training
their
commando squads and everything else. So, I could go on. Obviously, much is being made of the fact that the Hamas government is now actively preventing the people from evacuating northern Gaza, where the major land battles are expected.
They need
to take
them as
place.
Human shields, which used for.
This is typical of the way things are done in the Middle East. Has been for a long time.
But this isn't helping Israel's PR either. I mean, this continued bombing and things like that.
We didn't worry about PR after 9/11, did we? We went out and said, if you're not with us, you're against us. We're going to do our thing. We went into Afghanistan. I'm not saying it was necessarily right, but we did it. We went to Iraq, and to insist that Israel, faced with a comparable situation, be held to a higher standard than we hold ourselves is hypocritical in the extreme.
Thank you, Steve. After this, we're going to discuss the latest in the battle for the House speakership.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion, was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world, using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
It's been a week since House Speaker Kevin McCarthy was ousted, and the GOP is still speakerless. Last week, it looked like Steve Scalise would be voted in after he was nominated in a secret ballot. But some representatives were concerned about Scalise's neocon voting record and his health. He realized he didn't have the votes, so he quickly dropped out of the running. Now, it's Jim Jordan's turn. Jordan is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He's popular with the GOP grassroots, MAGA Americans, and he's been endorsed by Donald Trump. He has been one of President Biden's strongest critics, and his voting record over his many years in the House is a respectable 82% on the New Americans Freedom Index. This may explain why the media, rhinos, and neocons aren't too thrilled with the idea of having the fiery congressman as House Speaker. They likely see Jordan as a genuine threat to the Washington status quo. Some Republicans are openly warning they're open to cutting a deal with the Democrats on a speaker rather than support Jordan. Here is Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio on Face the Nation on Sunday.
Do you think that there is an alternate here where Republicans work with Democrats to find a mutually acceptable speaker?
Well, you know, that would not be my preference, since Hakeem Jeffries walked away from the opportunity to do that when Kevin McCarthy was on the floor. You know, the vote on the floor was, should the speaker, Kevin McCarthy, be removed? And every Democrat, 208 of them, voted to remove Kevin McCarthy. So at this point, I would prefer there to be, you know, a Republican solution, because when they rejected bipartisanship, it's kind of hard to then go back to it. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of people on the bench. I think Jim Jordan will be an excellent speaker. I think he'll be able to get to 217. If not, we have other leaders in the House. And certainly if there is a need, if the radical, you know, almost just handful of people in the Republican side make us unable to be able to return to general work on the House, then I think obviously a deal will have to be done.
Others are spreading rumors about Jordan's past. Jordan was an accomplished wrestler in high school and college. He won 4 state titles in high school and lost only once. In college, at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, he won 2 NCAA national wrestling titles. And he was an assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State from 1987 to 1995. Many people in Congress are predicting the anti-Jordan campaign will go nowhere and that he'll get the votes needed. He has the support of former Speaker McCarthy, and it looks like he's willing to go multiple rounds to get the needed votes. Okay, Steve, so this could be huge. To get a speaker like Jordan, it could be a really good thing for the MAGA first segment of the population, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, he's not perfect, but his voting record is much better than that of Scalise or McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And he has a couple of times exceeded 90% in a given, you know, for several of the Congresses he's been in there. He's done his most recent full Congress of 95% or something like that. So he's one of the good ones in my opinion. Again, not perfect. There's still some things he needs to learn. But given the alternatives, he certainly poses potentially a mortal threat to the rhinos and the deep state, and this fact is not lost on them, okay? Next to precluding Trump from a second term in the White House, keeping a guy like Jim Jordan out of the speaker's chair has got to be the top priority of the deep staters, because Jordan, for one thing, is a Ukraine skeptic, okay? So he's not, unlike Steve Scalise and McCarthy, who both, you know, are willing to keep the Ukraine gravy train going,
yeah,
more or less indefinitely.
Jordan, not so much, huh?
No, not so much. So he—that's just for one
thing.
That's
a good sign.
Yeah, and he has broad-based support from people like Gates and Marjorie Taylor Greene, people like this. So yeah, you can bet. The good thing about this is, should they succeed in stopping his candidacy, which at this point, be perfectly honest with you, it looks to me like they're probably going to do it or try. But
they're
it really does.
Stop it
it
right?
does help to show the true colors of at least a significant minority within the Republican Party. Even now, with the progress that we've made in getting a better crop of people, by which we mean more Americanists, more constitutionalists, more consistently and consistent and principled proponents of limited government, and obviously people who are interested in actually holding the line on government spending,
right,
and that kind of thing. Okay. Well, you know, we've got a good core of 20 and 40 people in the House that probably kind of fit that mold more or less,
yeah,
which is a lot better than, say, 20 years ago or 30 years ago when the name of the game was mouthing platitudes out on the hustings. And once you get elected, turning coat and siding with the D.C. insider every time, with exception of a Ron Paul. Okay, so but there's still a lot of people among the Republicans who definitely wear the rhino and neocon badges of honor, at least in secret. They are in total support of the way things have always been done.
Right.
They don't want to disrupt the status quo, which means, as far as the Republicans are concerned, that they, in effect, execute whatever the radical left Democrats propose.
Well, it's telling that they are considering, I mean, this is a good illustration of a uniparty now that you have the Republicans openly talking about working with the Democrats, which is also ironic, isn't it? Consider that's what they got on the Gates about.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Yeah. Sure. Well, and again, I mean, what Gates and others have been saying is enough of these secret ballots and backroom wheeling and dealing. Let's start having open votes on the House floor, which is, after all, what they did for McCarthy. Now, McCarthy, unlike Steve Scalise, who basically folded after one round of vote.
And after a couple of hours, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, in fairness, I mean, I don't think Steve Scalise was a bad guy.
I don't think he was up for the drama, right?
You know, but it's not enough to be a good guy at this point. We're that ship has sailed, okay? We have good guys in Washington. What we need are people who are going to hold the line in terms of upholding their oath of office.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're at the point where government spending alone threatens to literally destroy the republic, the debt and everything else that's going on. Not to mention the immigration issue, the catastrophe at the southern border, with all of that, those possible ramifications, the radical left being, you know, virtually having completed its long march through
and
all of our
cultural institutions. And we have another budget here in
Yeah, I mean, the country is literally falling apart before our eyes. This is not hyperbole.
Yeah.
This is happening. It is long past time for accommodationism, for saying, oh, well, you know, in the interest of keeping the peace and maintaining more or less stable governance, we need to go, you know, to get along to go along. We've tried that for decades. It hasn't worked. It's brought us to the very edge of the precipice.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't necessarily think Matt Gaetz, and for that matter, Donald Trump, are the nicest people in the world. But they're people who have convinced me and millions of other Americans that they are equal to the task of staring down the radical left for the first time in living memory and saying, no, if you want to compromise, here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not going to say, let's hike federal spending by 10% and we'll compromise at 9.5%. No, we're going to say, let's cut it by 10% this year and the compromise will be a 9.5% cut.
And
okay.
You think Jordan's
and that hasn't happened. I think Jordan might be the guy that could lead that. Also, he'd be third in line for the presidency, which is not a bad thing either. But you can bet that the deep state, the radical left, they're keenly aware of all this.
Yeah.
They've tried, I have a moment to talk about this, they've tried to resurrect a so-called scandal, which broke conveniently in 2018 regarding events that supposedly took place way back almost 30 years earlier when Jordan was an assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State University. And it turned out it was alleged in 2018 that the man who had been the team physician at that time had sexually abused some of the wrestlers or something like that.
Yeah.
This guy is long dead. Also, he committed suicide. He was Richard Strauss. He committed suicide back in 2005. And suddenly in 2018, with the MAGA movement ascendant and Jim Jordan, one of their standard bearers, out comes this scandal. articles in all the major news media alleging that Jordan, while he wasn't complicit or he wasn't actually, but he knew about it and therefore he was guilty and so forth and so on. And so that's being recycled and being brought back now.
I want to continue more about this. Let's take a quick, let's come back quickly after this. Hey folks, be sure to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And if you don't have one already, don't wait any longer to get a subscription to the print edition of The New American Magazine, which offers in-depth coverage and analysis. Subscribe at thenewamerican.com or by calling our office at 800-727-8783. That number again is 800-727-8783. Up next, it looks like Democrats in Connecticut were caught stuffing ballot boxes. But first, me and Steve are going to finish our conversation about the speakership.
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for The New American Magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American Magazine represents an alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country's in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American Magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
Welcome back, folks. Okay, so Steve, you were discussing the smear campaign that it looks like they're bringing back about Jordan. You think we'll be hearing more about this?
Oh, we already are. Yeah, it's being bruited about. In fact, at least you know several of those Ohio State wrestlers back in the day who alleged that this team doctor fondled them or whatever have come out in the last couple of days and reasserted, well, we have no sure, but we're pretty sure Jordan must have known about it because he was an assistant coach, and therefore he's not fit to be Speaker of the House. Yeah. So Jordan, back in 2018, when this thing first broke, he said this is a smear campaign. He refused to answer any questions about it. He said, I don't want anything to do with it. He wouldn't cooperate with the investigation. He said this is all nonsense and so forth. Not to mention the fact that these events happened, you know, decades ago.
Yeah.
The alleged perp has been dead for almost 20 years. So, you know, it kind of looks...
This is how it works.
Yeah, this is typical. And so, you know, this is the same sort of thing, of course, that Donald Trump has been subject to. And now it's being brought back. So, you know, people should be on the lookout for this.
Yeah. And before we move on to the next story, it looks like at least there's the few outlets that are reporting that we can expect some sort of another option to Jordan popping up on Tuesday. Does that sound
right? Absolutely. An unnamed individual who no doubt will be a rhino deep stater to the core.
Yeah.
Who will be sympathetic with all of their key goals and agenda items, obviously financing Ukraine, chief among them at this point, probably Israel
keep spending,
stuff.
And keep the spending.
Keeping the spending, obviously, continue with the continuing resolutions that will someday we'll get around to resolving, but not this time because we're out of time and so forth and so on.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to get somebody of that kidney. We don't know any names yet, but they're working on it.
Any guesses? You care to make any
No guesses, but I would say, you know, that when McCarthy started out trying to get the nomination, he fell short. What took like 15 votes before he finally did it. Jordan, again, having been a competitive wrestler and wrestling coach, he's probably ready for multiple rounds and for a protracted fight, which Steve Scalise, to his probably wasn't, in part because of his failing health. He has cancer.
He didn't want the nod.
You know, so Jordan is probably better also from the terms of being willing to sustain a good fight. We'll see.
We can only hope. All right. Thank you, Steve. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, a voter fraud trial is entering its second week. The trial is about whether there was election fraud in the Bridgeport mayoral election. At the center of the trial is a City Hall employee named Wanda Geeter Pataki, who was caught on video stuffing a drop box with absentee ballots. Geeter Pataki is also the vice chair of the Democratic Town Committee. She has pleaded the fifth to many questions, including whether she was the woman seen on surveillance footage making multiple trips in darkness to an election drop box outside a government building and then stuffing it with what looked like ballots. Here's local coverage of the trial.
Did you ever deposit an absentee ballot, a completed absentee ballot that was not yours in a city drop box?
On the witness stand and questioned for 35 minutes, Wanda Jeter-Patecki, the City Hall employee and supporter of Mayor Joe Ganim, took the fifth. She and her attorney refusing to answer questions.
Again, Your Honor, on behalf of my client, I would assert the privilege.
With nearly all of them focusing on her handling of absentee ballots.
Is that you placing completed absentee ballots into the drop box at 999 Broad Street?
And how she allegedly stuffed a number of them into a drop box or gave them to other people to do the same in the days leading up to September's primary.
Did you just high-five the gentleman who placed absentee ballots into the drop box?
Again, on her behalf, asserting her privilege.
After a video surfaced online, Democratic challenger John Gomes filed a lawsuit asking for a new primary. Gomes won the in-person voting at the poll, but the absentees, which broke roughly 2-1 for Ganim, put the mayor on top by 251 votes.
It stains the political world. It stains Bridgeport.
Also on the stand today, Anita Martinez, who's running for city council on the Ganim slate and also allegedly seen on video putting ballots in a drop box multiple times.
I think it's sad that election officials and campaign volunteers in the city of Bridgeport are forced to take this Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination.
But an attorney representing Bridgeport's town clerk claims the video isn't enough to overturn the election.
It says to me that this election may have had bad actors involved. I'm not saying that that didn't occur, but it's not to a level that would disenfranchise all the thousands of voters who did it right.
Steve, that last attorney, you can't help but laugh at that. It's like the absentee ballots broke two to one for the other guy.
Well, yes, but of course we know that the story is false because the Democrats don't do this. We know that all that video compiled by the likes of Dinesh D'Souza, thank you. You know, that's all fake.
News.
That's nonsense. None of that ever happened. All that video is those people were doing something else. They weren't stuffing ballots. So I don't know why we're running this story, Paul, because we all know that Democrats never commit vote fraud. It's always, or if they do, it's for righteous reasons, because otherwise the wicked Republicans might come to power. Yeah. Heaven knows they never stuff ballot boxes. They never summon the dead back to life to vote in large city elections like Philadelphia and Chicago and New York. Those things are all a figment of the vast right-wing conspiracy and its unbridled misinformation machine.
Meanwhile, on planet Earth...
Sarcasm, here, people. Just making that clear.
Yeah. I interviewed Dr. Douglas Frank back at the leadership conference in Iowa a few weeks back. And one of the questions, because, you know, he travels around and he talks about how voter fraud is being committed. And one of the questions I had for him is, how is most voter fraud being committed? Is it through the machines? Because, you know, he's worked with Mike Lindell. And when you hear Lindell and maybe even Dr. Frank sometimes, you would think it's the main culprit, or I guess, is the machines that change votes. But he said this is the way that voter fraud is most often accomplished, is through ballot stuffing. And obviously, we had just mentioned Dinesh D'Souza and his movie. This is... who knows how long this has been going on? I take it's been going on for decades. This is what happened. Is this not the way LBJ stole his 1947 Senate election as well?
I'm not sure. I don't think they had drop boxes in those days.
They had some boxes. Oh, yeah, you're right. They didn't have
the drop boxes were, you know, the large-scale drop box regime, which allowed the Democrats to steal the election in 2020. There, I said it, people. Okay.
If we weren't already kicked off of YouTube,
we wouldn't be able to say it, but we can say this.
Yes.
Okay, the election was clearly stolen.
We have nothing
stolen,
to worry about now.
And it was, and you know, Dinesh D'Souza's movie makes a very convincing case for how it was done.
Yeah.
It could not have been accomplished without this widespread regime of you know, absentee voters and drop boxes that was brought in, ushered in, thanks to COVID. Okay. Now, some states are getting rid of it. Getting rid of them now, requiring in-person voting or at most, you know, absentee voting.
Which states? We're one of them,
well,
right?
I think,
Wisconsin?
Yeah, Wisconsin's one of them, sure. I don't know if it'll be enough to tilt the balance next year, because you can bet that they will do the same thing in any states that they're permitted to do so next year in a desperate attempt to make sure that Trump and as many of his epigones as possible don't get elected to office.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Democrats, given the state of the polls right now,
they're
have got to be terrified about what's going to happen. Of course, we just had an election in the state of Louisiana where the Republicans flipped the governor's seat, and the guy that was elected governor was pretty good. He was in Congress for a while. He had a pretty strong voting record. So, you know, the expecting the entrails, we can kind of see what's coming if next year's elections are held on a more or less fair and impartial basis.
This is so huge.
Well, the best thing about this story, of course, this is actually Democrat on Democrat cheating.
Yeah, that may be why we're hearing that. I think this is also a great opportunity for us to shamelessly plug our Restore Election Integrity Action Project, which you can find at the JBS.org under Action Projects. I learned while putting that together that there are basic, when it comes down to elections, there are very basic things we need to get back to. We need to do in-person voting. We need to do it at precincts instead of these big warehouses where they're trucking ballots and things like that. We need to have voter ID. Crazy idea, I know. But apparently, voting is the only time it's racist. The IDs for every other time is fine. And I think there's one or two other things that we need to get done. Any last comments on the story and election integrity, Steve?
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens, Paul. It's right now, it's touch and go. I mean, when I look at next year's election, it's very clear who's going to win, barring a black swan event between now and then, by which I mean World War III or an assassination or something like that. It's clear what's going to happen at the polls a little over a year from now.
Yeah. Okay?
But I remain unconvinced that enough will be done twixt now and then to undo the problems in places like Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania in particular, that enabled Biden to get elected.
What about Georgia? Do we know anything?
I think Georgia is making some progress.
Yeah.
But there's still there. I think there's going to be ample scope for this kind of election day skullduggery next year. And given the fact that both Trump's claims and all the rest are being, still are being rejected out of hand and poo-pooed, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very interesting election. Thanks, Steve. Up next, me and Art Thompson are going to be talking about organization that works.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
Join me as the former CEO of the John Birch Society, Art Thompson. We've been talking about organization, and today Art is going to give us a solid example of organization that works. Thank you, Art. Always awesome to have you on, sir.
Well, thank you. Well, organization that works. First of all, you got to have the organization, right?
Yeah, we've been building up to that, right?
Yes.
That was a great example you gave me last week, by the way, of how you can organize in your community, have these screenings in your home, and invite people over for snacks, and then get them with the agenda and show them what's up. It was a great example.
Well, first of all, you do that, and then you start getting them active, doing little things, little steps.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to, depending on your community, you have to broaden out. You just can't just confine it to a neighborhood and that sort of thing. And that's what happened in our town, was that we started to have satellite organizations.
Is this back in Washington State?
Yeah, of support your local police and keep them independent committees. And then the city council was going to, or the mayor was pushing it, was going to pass an ordinance promoting a civilian police review board, which was another layer to monitor the police outside of the city council. And they would have a great deal of influence on watching what the police did and even have the ability to fire the police.
This has been proposed in other states too, right? New York and
all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, they may not call it a civilian police review board, but that's essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we mobilized everybody. I developed a plan. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And so what we did was we sent out a notice to all the leaders of the chapters of the John Birch Society, as well as the Support Your Local Police Committee, and said, let's all get together at this hotel. They give us free rooms anytime we wanted to use them.
Yeah.
And within a matter of 3 days, we had over 60 people there, leaders, not just members, but the leaders of chapters and the committees and so on and so forth. So this is what we did. First of all, we wanted to prove to people that the citizens of the community were not for this proposal.
Yeah.
So we had this questionnaire, and we were going to hit five distinct areas of the city, going door to door and asking people their opinion.
Yeah.
By the way, we told the questioners not to give the answer when it was asked, who are you people? We said, tell them this. We will tell you who we are after you answer the questions, because we don't want to prejudice your answer.
Oh, okay.
We want your absolutely, you know, straightforward answer.
And that worked?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we did that, and we all pretty much, we had enough manpower to hit at least 100 people in each of, you know, questioned, 100 people in each one of those five areas.
So that's 500 people. That's quite
that's
a poll.
Correct. Yeah. And so then, and by the way, one of those areas was the if you will, the more diverse community, if mm-hmm. you will, the colored folks and so on and so forth. So then what we did was that we were going to have a meeting with the mayor. So I called up the mayor and says, you mind mm-hmm. if I come and have an appointment with you?
Yeah.
Well, he said, sure, come on up. And I happen to know the man, by the way, so that's why mm-hmm. it was so easy.
There you go. That works.
Yeah. So at any rate, we did that, and so what we did was we gathered all the information. And then before we had the press conference, which was what the appointment with the mayor was, he didn't know it yet, because I marched in with the media on the day.
Yeah.
And so
you surprised the mayor, huh?
Surprised the mayor, yeah. So I met with the heads of the police union to let them know how these surveys turned out.
Yeah.
And there was only one thing on that survey of about, I would say, just thinking in memory, about 24 questions that the people didn't agree with the police department on. Everything else they did. So they decided they're going to drop that then in their demands. That, mm-hmm. you know, I convinced them that, you know, if you make that one point, keep pushing on it, you might lose a lot of other support. So they dropped those demands. So at any rate, and by the way, that's something else too. This you need to work with the police unions or whatever it else is an ally or something you're trying to support, you need to work with those people, the chiefs of police and city council members and the police union and so on and so forth.
Well, the chief of police answers, is it to the mayor or the city council?
The mayor and the city council.
Yeah.
I mean, he answers directly to the mayor, but the city council does have the final word locally.
So you guys were able to scrap the review boards, huh?
So what happened was when we marched into the office of the mayor, all the press was there with us, see?
Yeah.
And so that kind of took him aback. So we went into a conference room instead of his office.
So he had to be on good behavior.
Oh, huh? Absolutely. And he was quite honestly shocked.
Yeah.
And caught him off guard.
Yeah.
And so we showed him the results of this survey. And one of the questions that came up was, what was the difference in the area of, you know, where the Black Americans and the Chinese and Japanese
Hispanic.
All of those people lived? I said, there was a difference. It was 1.5%. And I said, here are the questionnaires right here. You can look at them yourself.
Yeah.
And so we caught them off guard. So the media was saying that the Black citizens were totally opposed to the police and all this stuff, and we proved them it wasn't true.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, there was, and I was one of those that doorbelled in the Black community. There wasn't one door where we weren't welcome.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because they knew we were their friend. We were the only ones in town who were supporting adequate police protection for their community.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You wouldn't know it watching mainstream media, but the communities that suffer the most when they attack the police, it's the communities of color. It's all, those statistics are undisputable. And so it makes sense. I mean, I saw even reporting, local reporting from Chicago, where citizens there are quite angry and frustrated at what's happening in their communities. And, you know, they're not, the police is not there. They've been demonized and whatnot. Sure. And they're the ones that are hurting the most. So it's not surprising at all.
So another thing that we did, I'll give you another victory. We found out there was going to be a riot. And it wasn't just in our community. This was going to be a nationally coordinated riot.
No kidding.
All over the country.
And you guys found this out in Seattle, huh?
Well, we found it out through our national contacts. But we also found out through the intelligence squad that it was going to happen in Seattle as well. The intelligence squad of the local police.
Okay.
So what we did was we published up a tabloid, you know, a small newspaper. Telling them what the problem was and what was behind it, and it was being planned and so on and so forth. And we went out and doorbelled that all over the areas, particularly in the colored areas of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Quietest weekend you ever saw. I mean, there was nobody out in the streets.
Yeah.
The rest of the country was burning down.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they had riots in L.A. and in New York and you name it. Well, it was also replicated. I don't remember whether it was Cincinnati or Columbus, Ohio. One of those.
You guys
towns.
Should have stuck around, because I'm pretty sure in 2020, Seattle had it pretty rough. And look at the condition it's in now. It's pretty bad.
Well,
shape.
One of the problems that we ran into, and one side is positive and the other side is negative. We did such a great job over the years with our Support Your Local Police committees that the problem went away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so now they, behind the scenes, the communists have crept forward, you know, influencing local city councils and so on and so forth. Until now, it's a serious problem. Our committees are just starting to grow again. So we need to build those committees and get them going.
There you go, John Birch Society members. Wherever you are, make sure you get back to work here. I mean, this is what we're Art, you've done it all. You've come up all the way through the ranks. You've done it all. Thank you so much for sharing these stories. We're going to keep having you on every week. I don't know if there's anyone better
there are.
To discuss this. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. Enjoy the rest of your day and join us tomorrow for another episode.